But for the sake of us staying a unified body, I think more people would say the deeper they get into their disagreement, I think what's natural is, well, you then need to leave the country, or I need to leave the country. And they don't see the weight of what they're saying. They're going, we might be better off without you. You know, so if you want to go to the, you know, to the West Coast, we'll split America in half and we'll live over here and you live over there. And they think that would be the better solution, because the more you're entrenched in your own thinking, the more I think we did a show, Tom, a couple of years ago, on the more that I am certain, and the more certain we are, the more I can diminish you as being immoral,
right?
Because I'm so certain, you don't really count.
Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard, and on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we as a society have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our show, Faith in Each Other. I'm your host, Jordan. And of course, I'm joined here with Thomas Ingram and his good friend, Reverend David Williams. Hello, guys. How are you?
Hey, Jordan.
Good, good, good.
Good. So today's topic, of course, is kind of a touching back on a subject, the insurrection that has occurred back in 2021. Of course, the January 6th insurrection has left us with a number of critical questions we still need to be answered to truly understand what has happened. So I want to open it up with Tom. More of a specific question here. How far did Trump go in his efforts to overturn the election?
Well, I think he needs to take total responsibility for everything that happened. I think that based on the hearings and everything, that it's clear that he was the instigator of what happened. So I think that once you get to that point where you're the instigator, then you pretty much have to take responsibility for whatever happens after that. But even if he wasn't as involved as he appears to have been, I still think that he should have had to take responsibility for what happened, because he was president. They were his people. And the actual details of who he called and what he did, I don't think it was as important as the overall overarching thing that he couldn't accept the election results because they weren't what he wanted. And that's just a very dangerous thing for democracy, because, you know, we had an insurrection in 1860 and it ended up bad. And it's Donald J. Trump who was responsible for what happened. And, you know, the details are less important, but the overall responsibility falls on him, and it really should disqualify him from running again.
Yeah.
Pastor Dave, it sounds like you have something to add on to.
Yeah, no, I agree with Tom. Under his leadership, under his watch, and especially with his accepting what was going on, then he bears the brunt responsibility as leader, sovereign leader, president of these United States. And I think that's one of the reasons we elect presidents, is to lead our country into healthy, I think, morally strong relationships, whether it is domestic or foreign. And we trust their leadership that is for the best for our country. And I think he has to embrace that it fell to his authority. And sadly, it looks like clearly he was very much engaged in what happened. So it falls to him. Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Do either of you know any kind of federal or state local officials that Trump pressured to overturn the election results in the run-up to January 6th?
My impression on that, just my general impression, is that President Trump caused the insurrection. And that was a really bad thing. And all the other government officials did exactly the right thing, refusing to, you know, cooperate with him in any way. And even a lot of his advisors were, you can't do this. So you can look at it as a bad thing, you know, that our democracy is weak, which it is. But you can also look at it as, wow, those people, that county commissioner in Georgia that phoned him back and said, no, dude, I'm not going to do that. You know, good for you. So there's a positive part of it, too. And the president who's right, if they'd taken over the Capitol, we wouldn't have helped them, as long as we really, you know, the rest of us have it in our heart what happened.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Jordan, I think there were quite a few advisors to Donald Trump who tried to awaken him to the severity of what he was pushing. I think of Attorney General Barr, who he released just before, you know, before this takes place. But Barr was just clearly trying to, I think, tell him legalities of the depth of what he was trying to do, and he would have no parts of it. So the best thing he would do is, let's just get rid of the Attorney General. And even though many men and probably women as well try to tell Trump that the choices that he was making were in no wise good for the country, I want to pick up with what Tom just said. You know, that was a great profession of democracy, people saying this is not in line with democracy. They might not have used those words, but I think that's what they were saying, you know, and this isn't party alignment. I think they were really trying to emphasize this goes against the grain of who we are. And what we want to see is you don't want that to happen, so we have to speak more like that. But what is comforting is that there were people who says, for the sake of the democracy, we cannot endorse this as truth, as the way to go. And that to me is a plus to the integrity of people who value what this country is. You know, let's stay according to the Constitution. Let's follow the law, the law of the land, even though, you know, it's going to make us look, you know, wimpy to our party. I think they were saying, for the sake of integrity of our Constitution, we must be true to the Constitution. And I will wholeheartedly salute that as an admirable stance by those men and women. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. Tom, how seriously did Trump or his allies inside the government explore the use of emergency power so he can remain in office?
I don't know, but I think that it would have been very difficult to do an emergency type thing. But the thing that I would really emphasize is how scary it really is to turn over power to the other people, right? It takes faith in them that they're not going to use that power to abuse us. And the problem I got with the January 6th committee is they should be trying to make us have faith in each other, not trying to point fingers at who did something wrong. I mean, I think you need to investigate the truth, and the truth needs to come out because people need to know what happened. But the tone of it should be, oh my goodness, our marriage is in trouble. Yeah, you may have done the wrong thing, but I'm still in trouble because I'm married to you. And do I want to get a divorce? Is that really what I want to do? And you can prove that the other person was wrong and it's all their fault, but you're still getting divorced. And in democracy, when it splits up, it doesn't end well usually. And I wish there'd be more outreach and less accusations. And I would look to President Lincoln as our guide, the person who led us through the last insurrection. And I believe he said, charity toward all and malice toward none. And I don't think punishing the insurrectionists is a good idea. I think it's a mistake because it, you know, it makes it just another victim. But what we need to do is understand that this is a trend that goes back to Clinton. People question Clinton's legitimacy. They question Obama. They question Bush. They question Trump, obviously. The Democrats never viewed Trump as a legitimate president. They thought he stole the election with help from Russia. So what we need out of that January 6th committee is not just fact-finding and accusation, but we need some kind of outreach to make the marriage better. And the other thing I'd really like to see from that committee is a red alert. Hey, folks, we are in trouble here. We got to do something. We got to start living differently.
The system held, but barely. Pastor Dave, did you want to add on to what Tom said?
I think for me watching the committees this week, and I didn't watch them all the way on Thursday, but I have been following the trials along the way. I think the biggest thing that I'm hoping for, and I think Garland, Attorney General Garland, is what brought this up to me, that I seem to want to pull toward. Attorney General Garland said, no one is above the law, and we must make sure that that is clear. You know, one of the great things about this podcast, we talk about dictators and monarchs who, you know, who rule by ultimate authority. And that's not who we are just yet. You know, that's not who we are. You know, we are a democratic process, a people, a nation that has representation and the voice of the people and all the votes and all that plays a part. But when I heard Garland, Attorney General Garland say that, you know, I'm hoping that what I've seen is that we want to make sure that this type of, we aren't in this boat again anywhere soon. We don't return back to the next president going, well, you know, Trump might have stumbled upon something, but I'm going to choose loophole number three so I can, you know, take control of the country, or, you know, take control of my office. I will find a way to have the power of this office. I'm hoping that we will reflect back upon a country that respects what we say, the Constitution, that the Constitution is the will, is the guidance for the people, not one voice. And not I would hope that when it all is said and done, Donald Trump would have learned his lesson. You don't get a second try at this. You don't get to come back in 2024 and say, okay, I want to run again. So this time I'll make sure I do whatever I want to do. Leadership, presidency should be, I'm going in to lead a country, not a group, not a faction, not a side. I want to do what is best for the country together. And so this does not, that put that office, that job does not become one fellow's or woman's. That becomes, you know, their position to rule for some and not for others. I'll say this real quick. When I was in Democrat Republic of Congo, and I remember this was from 2011 to 2013, to 2014. I just remember I would hear people say often the tribal presidents, whoever became president, would do well for his own particular tribe. And so whatever tribe he originated from, those people were ecstatic. You know, they were, they're going to get the best of whatever they're going to get, you know, access. But the other 400 different tribes or 300 different tribes, they had to clamor and hide because they became targets, you know, easy targets. And I would definitely hope that we would not become that type of rulership, that if it's my person, I know we're going to get the best of the crop, you know, the best of the fruit. But if you're anybody else, you're going to get the brunt. That's not the Americas that I was taught and raised to recognize as the Americas of, you know, of the many different people who make up, you know, this state. So I'm hoping that Donald Trump realizes that that seat is just not for him to play his game of I do for who I want and I spew out against others. That's that to me should never happen in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Pastor Dave, you mentioned something. You said we're not on we're not a tyranny yet, or a dictatorship yet.
Yeah.
Do you think there are signs that, are pointing to that? Is the insurrection one of the signs?
Yeah, I definitely think just again being on this show and having my my time with my dear friend Tom, democracies are not guaranteed. You don't, there's nothing in it that says once you have it and once you organize and create your constitutions and your amendments that people will live together happily ever after. There's nothing like that. But what happens often is just like in a marriage, and we often talk about the relationship of a marriage. A marriage starts out so well, you know, people honeymoon, people go to the movies, they buy ice cream for each other and they hold hands. But then you go back to that couple in about the 10th year. That's what I always say. If people make it to the 10th year, you might have a good chance. You might be able to make it, but you know, that I always call it a 10 year. But then you see all of a sudden people start to nitpick each other. People started to, quickly disagree with each other, quickly hold each other at fault. And eventually what happens is we do end up in a divorce court, or we can end up in a divorce court. What I think about America is, you know, are we in a prime position for our rift that has become so strong from our political process? Is it opening the door for a stronger voice or person or individual to come through, whether it is domestic or international, to come through and say, hey, you know, I got you. I'll take you over using whatever resources they have or is at their disposal. I do think there's a danger for that. You know, do I want it to happen? Not at all. Do I think we would be better off? Not at all. You know, but there are countries who have seen they occupy that position of they become the ultimate authority. And I definitely think we may be at this now, at this time of our history, treading in that water, that there is a potential that it could happen. So, yes. Yeah, I think we are there.
If I could comment on that.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. Yeah.
What I say is that once we lose faith in each other and we start bickering, like the Reverend was saying, and then, you know, the government becomes dysfunctional, right? The marriage becomes dysfunctional, where you can't raise an army, you can't pass budgets, you can't seat Supreme Court justices, you can't do the basic functions of government because you're too divided and so angry at each other that all you want to do is point fingers. Once you get to the point where the government can't do its job anymore, then its overthrow is inevitable. It will be overthrown at some point because it can't do its job. Right. And then people get really frustrated and Hitler starts looking good, you know, all of a sudden. You know? But to me, if we get so divided that the government can't get a Supreme Court justice in there, we can't appoint a Supreme Court justice because it's like this. Once that happens, then the democracy will fail unless it's pulled back. But the other thing I would say about the insurrection thing is I'm really disappointed in President Biden. I'm just very, very disappointed in how he handled the whole thing, where he's using it like a political weapon, in my opinion. And what I think he should be trying to do is reach out to the people that kind of identify with the insurrectionists, but aren't all the way there yet. I mean, and I just haven't seen any outreach from him at all either. And we're in a situation where, you know, a third of the country, half of the country thinks that he's totally illegitimate. He's not even president. because he stole the election. And you can't run a government like that. It's eventually it will get overthrown because it can't do its job.
You know, Tom, you know, sorry, Jordan, but
I was going to say, it kind of seems like we're in that tribal rulership that you're mentioning already. We're already in that mindset already.
Yeah. Republican is a tribe. Democrats a tribe.
Yes.
It's not a party.
And I read a statistic this week that said more than 50% of the American public are not confident in Joe Biden's leadership to this point. You know, to me, that's crossing lines. That's saying there is another way. People, I mean, from all sides are beginning to say, hey, the promises that were made, the promises that I would work with each other, the promises that I would cross the aisle and help. And I'm not laying it strictly on the arms of a president. I'm just saying, you gave me that you knew that there would be resistance. You didn't. This isn't brand new for you. You knew how to, by your experience and your longevity in the Senate, but you knew how to help those who didn't agree to begin to feel a sense of this is our country. I'm waiting on that to turn on. I am waiting on that to come about, because it's no better from one group to say, I don't like you. And then when I get in office, I don't like you. And that's still what we're doing. And Tom is right. We can't do business. You can't do business. And eventually the no business is going to open up for, you know, Oliver overthrow. He's going to come in at the right time and he's going to say, I got this. So I am disappointed in both groups. I am. But I've been disappointed in both groups for so long. I'm not just starting my disappointment. Yeah.
The best way to maintain democracy is to wholeheartedly embrace the democratic practices. Democracy at its heart is meant to provide the platform to actually create and work through the disagreements without allowing the majority to tyrannize the minority. Disagreement is the heart of democracy. Now, speaking of the specific actions that took place around the Capitol, Pastor Dave, do you know by chance who built the makeshift gallows and the noose in the west front of the Capitol?
You know, I don't know the group who is responsible for it, but I would choose to believe that they were using a tactic of fear. We're going to take over and use fear as our greatest weapon. And of course, the gallows always and nooses always symbolizes fear. And I think that's what they wanted. They wanted it to play in with what we're doing. You better be afraid, because we are going to, we now will take reins, and those who are not with us will be our sworn enemies. So I don't know the group, but I do know why. It's a great symbol of fear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, terror. I want to terrorize those. They wanted a strong point of, we're going to take this at all costs. I can't remember the one guy said we're going to do something using at every everything available, in a sense. And so they wanted you to know that we're taking control of the country, which they were not going to take control of the country. You had some offices, you had some buildings, but you got to remember, you got a military all around you. You were not going to shoot down the king sitting in the chair, you know. So I never understood that. You know,
what are they trying to do?
What were you going to take hostage? I mean, so that. But I think they want to leave a message. Mm-hmm. We feel it's our time to terrorize and put fear into the hearts of those who have before that moment been in leadership. So,
and most of the time they themselves have that fear, that same exact fear they're trying to spread. You know, it's infectious, you know. Speaking of other events, there was a pipe bomb that was manufactured and implanted somewhere on the outside nearby buildings. Any ideas, guys, on where those came from, or you know, any
pipe bombs are a pretty easy thing to make. It's not a real sophisticated device. And then you know what they call pipe bombs, and I mean, almost anything's a pipe bomb. I mean, they had a plastic pipe bomb the other day, a couple months ago. But my fear is that the Republicans will take over the Congress in 2022 and try to make the government dysfunctional. And use it, and the justification is that Joe Biden isn't the legitimate president. But to me, the insurrection, the purpose of the insurrection was to question his legitimacy. It wasn't to keep Trump in there as much as it was to say, hey, it's like the bumper sticker. I always say that Clinton was the first president who had his legitimacy question, and the bumper sticker was, my president is Charlton Heston. Right. So he's not my president. And I think that's what the insurrectionists were really trying to say is when President Biden takes over, you don't have to follow his what he says.
Sure.
No, because he's not president, man. He's a faker. So now you got no government. You know, I mean, it's I'm afraid that the people who want to take our democracy down are going to see dysfunction as the way to make it happen.
Right.
Don't approve anything. Don't vote for anything. No, 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 no. And then the government can't function, and then it has to be overthrown, then because it just can't do its job. And I'm afraid that the people that are still angry about all the stuff that happened with the insurrection are going to switch from insurrection to dysfunction as their strategy. That's what my fear.
How do you work through that fear there, Tom? I mean, you mentioned it a couple times. What are you doing to help cope with that fear? I mean, is there anything you can do?
We're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And it may be out into the ether and it's not helping, but we need to promote faith in each other.
Right.
And the people on the other side, yeah, they're the different tribe. I get that, right? But they're not bad people. I'm in Wisconsin today. You know, I'm in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And I'm just telling you, the people here, even the plant people, okay, my system doesn't run, okay? And the plant people are polite. And I don't know if they're Democrats or Republicans, but there's got to be both out there in this crowd. And they're just wonderful people. So, I mean, some of it is just go out and meet people, but a lot of it is outreach. We need to reach out to the other side. And here's the message. Your position is legitimate. There must be, even if though I can't see any value in it, I assume that it's legitimate because I have faith in you. That's what we need. And we're a voice in the wilderness. I get that. But
right.
But that's what it has to be. It has to be faith in each other, and it has to be outreach, and it has to be respect. And we're not doing that right now. And President Biden is not leading it. Leading us into unity. But the reason I was so into President Obama is because this is the exact language he used, right? When he ran, that there were no blue states or no red states. We are the United States of America. That was his message. And then he got in there and he couldn't make it better for whatever reason. But what we need is what he ran on.
Let me throw in as well something else that I see with the insurrection on January 6th. And Tom bring up a point that I heard in my head. I don't know if it was for the first time, but it was, Tom, your observation was it wasn't to keep Donald Trump as president as much as it was that you had people who were causing chaos, who were just wanting to bring down the government. They just want the government to fail. And I would tend to believe that. I think right now we're in a place where people are sowing chaos because if I can create a chaotic moment or a time of chaos, nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. I don't even care if my party might be wanting to do some stuff. I really don't care about my party either, right, or my tribe. I just want chaos. And I think that's so powerful because chaos itself is a very strong weapon. You know, for those who are in power, if they can create chaos on the east side or the west side, I can pull some stuff. I can rob the banks. I can pull take up all the land. I can do a whole lot more things for my own personal advancement if I can create a distraction of chaos. And I just think that's part of it, that we're living where there is more chaos and people are getting swept up on both sides inside the chaos. And when you're inside the chaos, you don't have anything firm. You can't even talk clear. All you know is, you know, why are you marching? I'm just marching. I just need to march. Why are you throwing the brick? I'm just throwing the brick because it's brick throwing time. You know, everybody else is throwing the brick and I think that's chaotic. And I believe that the insurrection says, can we now take advantage of this moment in time to create a even greater question of we cannot survive as a people? And I would not be surprised if people are saying, and maybe one of the people from their tribe, not Donald Trump or Biden, maybe, you know, the guy with the horns, maybe he's going to rise up and become the new leader and bring about a whatever. But I just heard that word of chaos, and chaos in any situation is quite detrimental too, because, you know, when people are running helter skelter in a gymnasium, you know, you can hurt more people in the chaos than you have one person says, hey, no, let's do this. Or the other person say, hey, no, let's walk safely to the door. And it looked like the January 6th moment for me was a moment to really present a chaotic front. Mm. And I think they were saying, let come out of this what it will, but we're going to make this a most frustrating moment. And America will buckle under this, saying, no, none of our politics worked. Now let's create a whole new system. So I just thought that was quite awakening for me for this moment.
Right. In the midst of chaos, there's always that opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible to even reach the extremists on either side? I mean, is all hope ever lost? I mean, should we focus on the bell curve? Like, go ahead, Tom.
The extremists are out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. In order to be involved in democratic debate, the first thing you have to do is say that you want democracy to win, right? If you, the guy waving the Nazi flag in Charlottesville, I'm assuming he didn't want democracy to win, because, you know, the Nazi flag is kind of, so he's not a part of the conversation. The extremists, don't worry about them. There's not enough of them to matter, and they're not part of the conversation, but don't worry about the extremists. Think about the vast majority of the good people that we have that want to do the right thing. But you were asking the question about what can we do. One of the things I'd really like to see people do is, you know, Donald Trump is in a press conference when he was president. And he comes out and he goes, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are bad people. I mean, that's essentially what he said. You guys are bad. They're bad people. And I would like one of the reporters to stand up and say, then you don't believe in democracy, do you? So you really can't be part of the conversation because you don't want the democracy to succeed.
But for the sake of us staying a unified body, I think more people would say the deeper they get into their disagreement, I think what's natural is, well, you then need to leave the country, or I need to leave the country. Mm-hmm. And they don't see the weight of what they're saying. They're going, we might be better off without you. You know, so if you want to go to the, you know, to the West Coast, we'll split America in half and we'll live over here and you live over there. And they think that would be the better solution, because the more you're entrenched in your own thinking, the more I think we did a show, Tom, a couple of years ago on the more that I am certain, and the more certain we are, the more I can diminish you as being immoral,
right?
Because I'm so certain, mm-hmm. You don't really count,
right?
So that's my question. That's my frustration. And I'll just throw this in. And anytime I'm so certain about what I'm saying, if you disagree with me, I have no problem hurting you or killing you or, you know, running over you with my car, because I just basically in my head says, you're not a real human being anyway. You're not, right. You're not real. Mm-hmm. So I think that it would be cool if we could get people to come to grips with that. No matter what you think about my opinion, is for the safety of a country. I don't think we're nowhere near that. I think people don't want to even go there because they are so certain about their, you know, whatever it is they're in discussion about.
Yeah. Well, so when is the Faith in Each Other community cookout? I mean, it could be all peace and love until somebody puts raisins in the potato salad. But back to the question on Trump. Did he communicate with organizers to ever stop the steel protests?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he organized. It wouldn't have happened without him. He was the one who caused that.
Right.
I mean, I think that's clear. I just don't understand how anybody could dispute that.
Yeah, he was clear, Jordan, of what needed, what could and should take place. And I think he knew that it would be a unreal moment. But I also know in Trump's own way, he thrives off of headline moments. He thrives off of a great moment. He doesn't seem to have the ability to weigh the impact. It's just that moment, that rush and thrill of, I am the ultimate thought in this moment. I think he just felt in this direction that's led by me, that's caused by me. I'm not thinking about the impact on a country. I'm not thinking about the impact on a constitution. I think he was saying, I am the ultimate person in this time. And so I think he pushed it. I think he fanned it and helped create it. But I think it fed his ego. I think it fed everything about. And so his people got caught up in his rhetoric. They got caught up in his performance. You know, this is George Patton all over. You know, this is the best patent that we've ever, I mean, our latest patent. And so those who just jumped in said, since we got to go from the head guy, we're going to go with it. I don't think they understood at all what Trump was espousing. They just know he had given them go for it. And he pushed it. He pushed it.
But the thing I would say about that, Jordan, is that if he had come out in front of the White House and got in front of the TV cameras and said, you guys need to stop, they would have.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody disputes that.
Oh, no.
Okay. So that's why he's responsible.
Yeah.
It's not for what he did. It's more what he didn't do.
And I knew he knew he had center stage with those people. He had them totally committed to his every command.
So the Journal Science recently posted that findings suggest that half of Americans anticipate a civil war. Are we on our way? And I mean, many of them said they would trade democracy for a strong leader. Without the right leadership, we're headed down a dark road. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, many of them will follow a strong leader. I will go back to the Old Testament. You don't know what your leaders are capable of. When Israel had gotten to the point that they were tired of being held to moral standards by judges, they approached Moses and said, we want a king. We want a king. We want a dictator like every other tribe's dictators. Mm-hmm. And God's word to them, no, a dictator will rule you harshly. But I'm offering you an alternative where people will look at one another and morally make decisions based on each other. And they said, no. I think people can fantasize about anything. I think it's easy to fantasize. Well, if we get a dictator, at least, you know, we'll just line up with what he or she says, and it'll take all the sting or the problems away that we're having now. To me, that's fantasy. You know, just go around the world and see some of the atrocities that leaders, that dictators have done to their people. You know, I mean, nobody in their right mind would say, you know, I want to live under someone who can just go into a segment of community and just genocide a whole group of people at the drop of a hat just because I said they are not worthy. I just can't see people saying that that's better than a democracy. But the fantasy says, I think the fantasy of what we want to espouse is our government has failed us. I think people are clear that what this government has morphed into is not the government that they expected nor believe in anymore. And they don't know what to do next. And so they're saying, well, maybe if this government has ran its course, let's go for an Adolf Hitler. Let's go for Saddam. Let's go for Khmer Rouge. Let's go for, you know, I think they're just out of in frustration. People would begin to say, yeah, just, you know, let's just get a one man, one person in there and we might be better. But I would tend to believe that's frustration talking. I don't see it as being a true choice of people who really want to see the country get on a better footing than it is. Yeah.
Tom, did you want to add on to what?
Yeah, the biggest advantage of a dictator, if we want to, I think that democracy is in total trouble. I really do. But the biggest advantage of a dictator, one of the ways I would like the American people to see it is that if the dictator comes in, the bickering stops, right? Mm-hmm. All the stuff you hear on the TV, attacking me, attacking my group, attacking my tribe, that all goes away. So we have the right to free speech, right? But that doesn't mean that you should say anything that pops into your head either.
Right. Right? Tom, you just said it. I don't, you know, there's some things that will go away automatically that people won't even, that we won't even think about right now, but there's mm-hmm. some stuff will just poof go. But I also think there's some things now that come into play that under the leadership of a dictator, you know, he might be, you know, I just wonder if you don't have red spiked hair, you're out. You know, you just out, you know, and I just go, we gotta think about the fan. If we want a more perfect world, we have to put up to make it a more perfect nation. It doesn't come about simply because we said we chose this country and this country's constitution. But I think it is, and Tom, you've often said that, Lincoln said, if we can make this democracy work, if we can keep it, it's a great way to run a country. But the emphasis is on if we can keep it. And I think right now people might be debating, is it worth keeping? You know, and I hear this in marriages all the time. This is what people normally come in my office, sit in these chairs, and they will say, one will say, I don't think I want this marriage anymore. The other one is saying, but we put so much in it. We have this, we have the family, we got the home, we got the car, you know, we got the children. We've been able to go, but one of them, you know, is basically saying, I don't think I want to even put the energy in anymore for this marriage to work. That's the killer, that's the dagger. I don't want to put the energy in. The other person is saying, I'm willing to use my energy. I'm hoping if you bring your energy together, we can have a catalyst for something better. But when a country, you got people saying, I don't want to use any energy anymore to make this a good country. We're in trouble then. And I think the insurrection showed that there are people saying, we don't have the energy to help our country anymore. We want to pull away. And I think that's the danger. when people are saying, I don't want to help make it work anymore.
We often take democracy for granted. Tom, how do we revitalize that energy? You've mentioned outreach before. So
I think the first thing would be to try to get an educational thing where everybody understands that our democracy is in trouble. And then I think that once you have the acknowledgement that it can be, that democracies don't always stay, that, you know, paralysis, internal division, turning on each other, that's what divides us. If we could have some kind of educational thing like that, mm-hmm. where the goal isn't, so, you know, the American people don't really believe that democracy can fail, you know, in their mind, getting divorced isn't something that can really happen. So if we could get it out there, that's what I'd like the insurrection to be, is look, we're facing divorce here. Okay. And it's a risk. And this is what divorce is going to look like. It's the fear of what it is on the other side. That's what keeps you together. But like I said, I think a lot of marriages end just because they don't want to hear the bickering anymore. And that's kind of where we're at, I think, is that, yeah, dictator might be horrible, but at least I won't have to listen to Nancy Pelosi anymore. At least Donald Trump won't be on TV. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the attraction to it. And it's a frustration thing. And you're not really thinking about what it's going to be like on the other side. But when democracies fail, you end up with Hitler, with Mussolini
now.
Chavez. I mean, yeah. It doesn't end well, because it ended with this conflict. No. All this animosity that's built up over the arguing, and then that plays out in the post-democratic period.
The U.S. could be under a right-wing dictatorship by 2030. A Canadian political science professor has warned us. He urged the country to protect itself against the collapse of American democracy. It falls on all of our shoulders to protect democratic principles. Now, Tommy said we need to educate everybody that we are at risk and everything, but it brings me back to the extremists and everything. How do we reach somebody that's so far in their beliefs? How do we get them to understand what's happening?
Talking to the extremists. That's exactly. I mean, you're not trying to educate the extremists. Mm-hmm. They are entrenched in whatever it is, but you have the power of those in your sphere of influence, those people who connect with you, to have a conversation. And I believe, especially in the African-American community, because we don't particularly trust politics, we don't talk politics. I mean, there's in the academic world for sure. But I think about people I know who won't vote, because it's their way of saying, I'm not voting because I don't believe in anybody on either party. I don't care about America. I only care about myself. And I'm going, then you don't care about democracy. To me, you're not thinking about the what could happen in the democracy that's going to affect you whether you vote or not. I think that it is a great opportunity now to help people to think about, why is democracy so important for those who are just saying democracy has no bearing on them at all? That's because people never had a conversation like this. There's so many people, I just took it for granted. America, America, God shed his light on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. You know, we sung that growing up, but you never really were brought into that conversation of what makes America and these 48 and those two other states, what makes it a unique nation is its processes. It is its constitution that bears on all of us. But how do we keep it going is something that many of us have never, ever thought of. Because going back to that couple analogy, we've already given up on, is this bad? Is this marriage worth saving? So I think we got to have the conversation of what is at stake if this marriage should fail. That's right. What people are not hearing, what's at stake. And so when I do a couple, you know, when I bring a couple into a discussion, I have to bring up, yes, the two of you can part for sure, But you have to think of, if there are children, the impact on your children. If there is any type of resources, houses, money, the impact, your cost of your living experiences are now changed. You know, people, oh, no, it's going to be all right. We are all right. No. Remember when you were living on two paychecks, all the bills were paid. Now you're going to live on one paycheck. There's some bills may not get paid. And so I'm just going, it's helping people see this decision is possible, but it is going to have really a long line of ripple effects in the world that you once thought of as a comfortable world. And so that's where I think many Americans are not even aware of. They're just going, the country, it's either going to implode, or Russia's going to come over and take us over, or China's going to come over and buy up all the real estate, and we'll still, you know, live down on 287. All of that could go away at the drop of a hat. Every man could be put into a military, no matter how old you are. It just does that. We've got to make people see the life that even that you dream about can be X'd off if we do nothing. But if people were to get a real introduction to what can be lost, most people wake up when they hear the lost side.
Right.
You know, when they hear the lost side, they go, you mean I'm going to lose my yacht? Yep, the yacht's got to go. You know, I'm going to lose the Rolls Royce, got to go. We got to sell it.
But the other thing that I think would really help, Jordan, is if we could identify what the conflict really is. And that's another marriage thing. It's like, what are we really arguing about? You're talking about this, but I think the real problem
is really elsewhere. This.
Yeah. And what I would say is, and I hate to put this on you guys because I know how this is just going to sound outrageous to you, but the conflict is between high school educated white people and college educated white people. That's the conflict. And if we could see it that way, then I think that would help us. And that's why I always think that the African-American community would be a perfect mediator, right? Because you kind of like, and then you understand, you've had the experience. So, you know, I mean, I hate to put it all on you, but the white people is fighting, man. You got to straighten this out.
We're going, let them kill itself.
No, but right. That's what I believe the conflict is. It's high school educated, college educated white people that are in the conflict.
And I won't disagree with that because I believe you're right. But that educational part is just huge to me.
I know it is.
It's bringing the awareness up, because I think once the awareness comes up, it diminishes the chaos where people are just living in chaos and people are keeping more and more chaos. I'm going, we need it again in a marriage. I'm going, often what people tell me is their issue is never the issue. It's just the upfront issue. It's the latest impact.
Right.
But when you look back over 5, 6, 7 years of behaviors, you will definitely strike out and says, but this has been going on for this amount of time and you never dealt with it. But along the way, you've had more distractions. So the educational part of democracy to me is quite important. And to get the news into those who will at least entertain it.
Okay, and due to some technical difficulties, we're going to have to draw this meeting kind of to an end here soon. But I want to end on this little segment. The only thing necessary to triumph over of evil is good men to do nothing. And what happened on January 6, 2021 was nothing like even the 2020s most violent riots or really any other protest in the last 100 years or more. Why an armed uprising occurs and what its members hope to accomplish matter. This event has shattered our faith in each other and our democracy. How do we move forward with the wounds that we have suffered? Is there any hope in reestablishing faith in each other and in our country? And I just want to thank you all for being here with us today. I want to thank you, Tom, and I want to thank you, Pastor Dave, for being here and really giving us some good insight on the situation at hand. And of course, I want to thank you all for being here with me today and with us today. And I hope as we move forward in this week, we all try to practice the faith that we have in each other and remember that we are all in this together. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations and, most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we are going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.